Today's gospel reading comes from the book of John, chapter 12. Now among those who went up to worship at the festival were some Greeks. They came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, and said to him, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." Philip went and told Andrew, then Andrew and Philip went and told Jesus. Jesus answered them, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly, I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Those who love their life lose it, and those who hate their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, there will my servants be also. Whoever serves me, the Father will honor." The Word of God.
Have you ever lost your life? You know what I'm talking about if you've ever gotten that phone call or that diagnosis or something happened where you know that suddenly your life as you had known it was over. There was a line now between what was before and what was now and would be forevermore. You know that line where you just can't go back to what was anymore. And I'm not talking about the little things in life, the little deaths that happen to us, all those little scary moments. I'm talking about the really seismic things. You probably have one in your head now where you have something in your head. You know where you were sitting when you heard the news kind of moments. That's what I'm talking about today. Those moments where something died. The life that you had before died. It was never going to come back again. It was like the people in the Exodus, you know, they crossed to the Red Sea, and if they had any thoughts about going back, those thoughts were done because the water had washed away the path, and there was no going back. You could sit there, or you could move, but there was no going back. That's what I want to talk about today. That is maybe what Jesus was talking about when he was doing that foreshadowing thing, when he was talking today about that grain of wheat falling to the ground and dying before it could bear fruit. I think he wanted people to know that, yes, there has to be death before there can be life. I want to talk about the Gospel of John a little bit in the context in which this whole thing was written, because, you know, you're not all up on that, right? What is happening when this passage is written? A grain of wheat must fall to the ground and die before life can happen. First of all, the Gospel of John is a little different. Maybe you know that. Maybe I'm just a little remedial here, you know. Humor me. Maybe you don't. There are four Gospels, right? And three of them are very much the same. They call them the synoptics. They're fine. They're good. They're the same kind of synoptics. Get it? And then you have John. John is different. John is weird. John, you may not know this geographically, but John hovers his stories all around Jerusalem. You know, you have it in your head that Jesus was off and about, up mountains, down mountains, across seas, crossing here, there, towns, Galilee. Yeah, those are from the synoptics. The Gospel of John, geographically, he's hovering all around Jerusalem. He never goes very far. In fact, just before this passage, he went maybe as far as he went when he went to Bethany and raised Lazarus. If you looked at the Gospel of John like from a drone, you would see maybe Jesus circling Jerusalem as if he's walking a labyrinth. Have you ever walked a labyrinth? You know, like, you know, you go in and you out and you circle and you in and you out and you circle. And what is John circling in the Gospel of John but the heart of the gospel, which is this death and this rising again? And if we pick up the story now, he's kind of gone out to the edge with the raising of Lazarus, and now he's circling in. He's going right to the heart. He's going right to the Passover. We're skating to the end of Lent here, folks. We're going right into Holy Week. And he's about to enter the Passover. He's about to to close in on the center, and here's what he says. He says, just so y'all are clear, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, there can be no fruit. And the people are like, yeah, we've heard that. Because honestly, the people that read the Gospel of John had already read the synoptics. They were written before. They'd heard this before. Yeah, we get the foreshadowing, Jesus. We're on board with this. And Jesus maybe said, uh-huh. Just to be clear, you have to die first. Die as in really die, like really let go of, like not like fake die and then resuscitate, like it's die and resurrection, not fake it and resuscitation. So I can understand why he would want to warn them again that this is going to happen, because it's hard. I mean, who would sign up to die? Who would want your old life to completely blow up? No one would want that. No one would want the bad thing that you had just conjured in your head moments ago. No one would have wanted that to happen to you. No one would want the person you loved most in the world to die, or your marriage to end, or the bad thing to happen. No one would have wanted that. But there it is. And there's a danger, I suppose, in pretending that it didn't happen in some level deep in your heart, some level of saying, it didn't really happen. Maybe he'll call again. Maybe the boss will call me back and say, after all, I didn't mean to fire you. You are marvelous, and I want you back to come and run the company after all. Maybe these things will happen, and it didn't really happen, and it can go back to the way it was. And maybe if I make Christmas exactly the way it was back on the best Christmas ever, that best Christmas can happen really again, and all the bad things that have happened in our family since will be as if they never happened. If I just get the sweet potatoes right. There's a danger in pretending that death really doesn't happen. And pretending that it can, you can fluff it back up and it will be like it was. But it can't, Things have to die. The water's closed over. You can't go back. And there's not only a danger in just fooling yourself to thinking that they haven't really died. There's actually a danger that you can get frozen in it, and instead of, you can just have your identity become the bad thing that happened. Have you known people that this has happened to, where they got kind of stuck in a place that said, I am now, my new identity is the bad thing that happened to me. I am the one that was wrongfully accused. I am the one that the bad thing happened to. This is who I am now. And they go through their life frozen in that identity, in which case it never really died. There's dangers all around. But Jesus said, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, there can be no fruit. Really. As if it goes like this, die, life. And I do believe that. I do believe that the narrative art goes like that, because I'm a good narrative thinker. I was raised on Lucas and Tolkien, and I'm going to go see Dune. I mean, I like stories that have an arc like that, where the hero's journey happens, and you go through hardship, and if you do it really well, then it gets sunny on the other side, and the pain ceases, and the music plays, and I want that arc to happen, because I don't want the suffering to be forever. I would like it to end. So yeah, I'm down with that. And that's actually one of the reasons I really like Christianity and I really like Jesus and I tolerate Lent, because I really want to get to Easter. There's a poetry to it that I really like. It's a beautiful poetry, and it's one of the reasons I like the Gospel of John. The John is all about the poetry, the light of the world, and all the poetry stuff. Down with the poetry. But here we go into some practicalities, because, honey, it's not all poetry, because I've got some practical questions about all of this. I'm okay, actually, if I think about it, with the when it's my time to die, like physically die, my body dies, I leave this earth, whatever happens. I've thought about it a lot. Did I tell you I work in hospice? I think about dying a lot. I'm actually pretty okay with that. I think in many ways it'll be relieving. It sounds kind of nice in a lot some days. Sounds great. But what about all the deaths that happened before that? What about the really big deaths, the deaths that I'm grieving of all the bad things that happened where the life I had before is over and now I'm living the life now? And I've got some practical questions about what do I do with my grief? Because I'm still here and it's not like my memory was erased. It's not like the guy in Severance when he goes to work and suddenly he doesn't remember where he came from. I remember the past. And I'm trying to live in the present and go in it, but I remember the past and there's grief. And how am I supposed to live with grief and the real troubles life now? Like, how do you live with the grief of the way that things were before the big line happened that I made you think about at the beginning of this thing? How do you fold in the grief for all of that? I mean, you have bills and student loans and probably that light that flashes in your car that tells you that you're way overdue for your oil change and all the things that you have to deal with living while you're carrying around the fact that the person maybe that you love the most is gone. I mean, there's some practicalities to this dying. When you said yes to Jesus, I understand a grain of wheat, and then you've got to live with the death. Well, you're still living? The life before is gone and you're still living? The Exodus people left and they still got to walk? How do you do that? Maybe you liked who you were before. Maybe you liked the job you had. Maybe you were in love with the person you had before. Maybe you missed your dog that died. I mean, how do you live like this? I don't know, except that I go to Walter Brueggemann. Have you heard of this guy, Walter Brueggemann? He studied the Old Testament a lot. Big old guy. I think he should trim his ears more when he talks. He's very distracting. And I like him, though, so much. And so I've been going back to Walter Brueggemann because he studies the Exodus a lot. And so I like the Exodus story, these people who looked back and the path is gone and they've only got the future. And if you know the Exodus story, I bet you do, you're smart people. They wandered for 40 years in the desert. But do you know what I found out? Is that they could have done it in 11 days. That kind of blew my mind. 11 days. It's an 11-day journey. 40 years. What were they doing? Wandering is the verb. They were wandering. Brueggemann says that maybe they were trying to figure out what they had to relinquish. And he said that, and this word went off like neon in my head. Relinquish. I mean, I was videoing him. I paused the video. Relinquish, that's the word. How do you figure out what to relinquish and what to hang on to? What has to die and what lives? And I go back to this metaphor that Jesus tosses out at this part of the Gospel of John. Unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it cannot bear any fruit. And I'm grateful for this metaphor. You know, a lot of the metaphors I don't think hold up. Sheep, I'm not sure it's holding up for us very well in St. Paul right now. But the grain one, I think, does. And I Googled it like a first grader who has a term paper due, and I Googled what happens to a seed. A seed goes into the ground. It's got a shell. I was hoping for a fancier term to impress you, but apparently it's just called a shell. And the shell cracks, and it starts disintegrating in the soil. But in the shell itself, it has everything it needs for new life. All of the nutrients, I'm doing this with my fist because it's like a picture. Everything it needs to grow is in the center of this shell. And the shell breaks away and it starts crumbling, but it doesn't crumble all at once and disintegrate. It just starts crumbling and falling away. And then the new life bursts through this seed, and it's called the endoderm. There's a word, endoderm. And it's all happening at the same time. So if I take Brueggemann's word to relinquish, maybe my task is, how do I figure out what to relinquish? What is the shell and what is remaining that lives from what was the before time? What about the person I love that died carries through in my genes, in my memories, in the lessons and how they laughed and what they taught me that I can carry forward? What about the experience I had, the job that I had, the whatever it was, can I take through like that endoderm and bring new life forward? And what about it just needs to stay in the ground? What do I relinquish and what do I hang on to? These are the questions. What about myself and who I was then needs to die? And what about myself then need do I carry forward? And then there's the anger, though. No one talks about anger, do they? I do. Because I had some anger. Because I will bet, I don't know, not a show of hands, that would be rude, but when you conjured up this idea, this memory of the before line, when your life changed and is it now, chances are you did not. It was not you that drew that line. Something happened. A diagnosis, a phone call, a DUI, a incarceration, a overdose. I don't know what it was, but I bet you didn't choose it. And I will bet there's a large percentage that just happened because something was wrong in the world that caused it. And there's good reason to be mad about all that. What do you do about the madness that things aren't the way they were and you might have liked the way they were? And you didn't want that bad thing to happen and it's wrong and it's unfair and it's okay to be mad. And you know, can I say that twice? It's okay to be mad. Mad is an emotion. It's just neutral. It's not good or bad. It's whatever. It's just a thing. It's kind of like fire. Too much of it could, you know. But it also just is a thing. And it's beautiful. And it can do stuff. So Jesus didn't talk about what to do with all this anger. And I notice when my friends and I talk about it, because they have things that have happened to them, and some of their things are similar to the things that happened to me, and it comes under the heading of things like patriarchy and misogyny. And so then we get together, and our anger kind of piles up, and if it's like a fire, it gets kind of ragey. And then I pay attention to myself, and I think, I'm not sure all this flame is really good for my heart. And I've got questions for Jesus about that. What's the right temperature of this flame for my heart? I don't have any answers yet, but I'm really paying attention. I wish there was a dial for it. I don't have a dial yet. Maybe you do. You should tell me if you do. Here's what I have come to understand, though, is if all this anger that happens is just individual, and we keep it to ourselves and we shut the door on it, then all those injustices that made the bad thing happen never get solved. All the Sacklers never get held to account, and all the gun lobbies never get held to account, and people keep throwing chemicals in rivers that cause cancer, and nothing ever gets solved. So it can be used. So yeah, there's poetry to the Gospel of John, and there's poetry to grains of wheat that fall to the ground and die, and there's practical questions I have about grief and about anger and about what to relinquish and what to hang on to. But I really want to understand what Jesus is talking about the grain of the wheat and dying, and I really actually do. I am intrigued by the story of following him into the labyrinth of Jerusalem. But here's what I'm coming to understand. The older I get, the more I like the Gospel of John. Because what my experience is lining up about him is that I think what I've thought all along is kind of wrong. You know how I started at the beginning and saying it's like a linear narrative. There's Lent, and then there's Easter. There's pain, and then there's sunniness and lack of pain. There's like grief, and then there's closure, and then you move on. I don't think like that anymore. At all. You'll notice I'll never use the word closure anymore. Because I look at the Gospel of John and I go back to its thinking like it's a labyrinth, and I think that that's true. And the more scholars I study that study the Gospel of John, they're telling me that it's true too. That the Gospel of John, and maybe the whole story of Jesus, is that it was written like, it was Aramaic first, which is more like this. And then it got squished into Greek, which is more like this. And maybe that's why it's been so hard for my mind to understand. My ancestors were Norwegian and Welsh. I think that instead it's more like a labyrinth, and it's mystical, and it's more like a science fiction movie where all the time happens everything at the same time, and the suffering and the healing is happening at the same time, and the dying and the rising is happening at the same time, and like that grain of wheat is in the ground, and it's shattering, and it's growing at the same time, and then like the grain had the death and the life in it from the very beginning is all at the same time. And I'm sorry to tell you that if you're grieving, I don't think it's going to come a point where it stops and you start living again. I think the grieving and the living is always going to be happening at the same time. I think it just mushes all together, and there's going to be times where there's going to be more and less and one of the other, but I think it's all wrapped up in this mystical journey to the heart of the gospel, which is somehow in the mystery of it is death and resurrection is all at the same time. And if that's the case, then that matches my experience, and I am 100% in. And I wish it wasn't so, because it's really untidy and it's really messy. And it's really painful. And it's really beautiful. Life is really terrible and really beautiful all at the same time. And I guess the question is, am I in for the depth of it or not? It's the same question Jesus asked at the very beginning. Are you really in for it? Because here we go, strap in, we're going to the heart. And if you are in for it, then it is not a shallow life, it is a deep life. And if you're really into it, it's not a lonely life because you sit with your friends and yeah, the flame can get out of control, but it is a life of connection. And if you really get into it, it is also a life of purpose because it's all bound together all at the same time. This death and this resurrection, this beauty and this terribleness, this labyrinth, this heart, this poetry and this practicality, this life and this death. That's it.